Here with tape two. Why didn't you say what it was, first of all, how long and how frequent your visits were to Ellis Island to see your uncle, and then how you got here and all the particular details of that.
Well, my brother and I were devoted subway riders, and we especially liked the elevated subway. So to go on the elevated train here, it's just a very pleasant Saturday excursion. And then a boat ride at the same time. And then chatting with my uncle for an hour or two. Can't remember how long it was. And then we would have this lovely ride home. And we did this many a weekend. Now, we were also members of the Museum of Natural History, so we couldn't have done it every weekend. But if you were to ask me now, I would say we did it every weekend for quite a while. Yeah.
For like more than a year?
Well, it seems to me, right? I don't recall actually going in the thick of winter because most of the time we just stood outdoors and watched the Ellis Island approach and enjoyed the wind.
And say something about the boat that took you here.
Well, it looked very similar to the one we came on. It had the same benches
The circle
along the.
line that you came on?
Well, it had the same rather uncomfortable benches on the inside.
And did you say
And
it cost a nickel?
it cost a nickel. Yep. The subway cost a nickel, too. And you could spin the subway out to an hour and a half of riding if you were good at
Did it cost you a nickel to go back, or the same nickel brought you back?
You know, I don't remember if that was a two-way trip, but it was a nickel. It was very reasonable to get around town.
And then where would you meet with your uncle once you got to Ellis Island? Do you know, like,
In the
in the
hallway,
Great
they
Hall?
had, I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was that great hall that we came in. But it was certainly a large hall with big tables, and we sat opposite each other. And there were other people too who came doing the same thing.
Do you remember, did your uncle ever talk about what was possible? In other words, did they have an active library here? Did he ever talk about how he spent his days?
Well, I told you we did talk with him about his time here to some extent, and he told us of the school they had started and some of the classes that were being taught. And then he took enough trouble to make copies and send me a copy of one of the classes he was teaching.
Do you think he made fr he had friends here? I mean, did
I'm
you have
sure he
any?
did. I'm sure he did. And the general aura was convivial, in my view. And as I said, the guards were all nice to us. We soon knew them by name, too. We'd always say hello to them. They'd say, "Oh, he's waiting for you." So it was a friendly atmosphere. If you had to be detained, it was a friendly atmosphere.
Yeah. Were you aware of people leaving,
No.
being repatriated or being set free here?
No. No. He never talked about missing somebody or that a good friend went off. He never spoke of that. And even when he came out, he did not complain of his time. He was not a complainer. I would have never known he was in solitary confinement, certainly. And the only thing he did mention was at his trial, he said that there were quite a few people who lied at the trial regarding him. And he, of course, felt that was very unjust. And that is about the one thing that he talked to me about that he felt was very unfair.
Did he say what they lied about or anything?
No,
like that?
No. No, not specifically. He didn't tell me, but he did tell me that witnesses lied and got him into trouble. Yeah.
Did he ever give you any indications, like, why he thought the United States shouldn't get into the war?
No. Mm-mm. No. And, of course, I have since read a great deal about it, certainly. The First World War, there are many, many people who feel we shouldn't have gotten into that war. Many people who feel we shouldn't have gotten into the Spanish-American War. Mm. Never mind our most recent war. Many contrary opinions. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you seem to be much more able to have contrary opinions now than you did at that time.
That's true.
At that time, for World War II, it was a gung-ho effort, and there were no contrary opinions.
Right.
Once it had all started.
Good point, yeah.
Right. So times have changed so far as war is concerned.
Yeah. Now, I've interviewed some people who were interned here, some German people, and they said the worst thing was that they didn't know what was going to happen to them. Did your uncle ever talk that way, that, you know, here he is, his life is interrupted, he's detained someplace, and didn't know what would happen?
I'm sure it was a worry for him. I'm certain it was a worry for him. And let's say even soldiers weren't told where they were going to go and where they were going to be sent. And just one day, you get orders. And, of course, the same thing would be happening to detainees. And I'm sure it was a worry for him.
Mm-hmm. But he probably didn't talk about it because he didn't do that?
Well, we were kids.
We were
young kids. And
do you remember the Christmas party? What do you remember about the Christmas party?
Well, we do remember that it was festive and that it was a very nice dinner and that people seemed to be in very good moods. So, and for a change, my little sister came too, plus my parents. Normally, we seem to go alone all the time to visit our uncle.
Uh-huh.
And
we
got dressed up. Right? Yes, we got dressed up. Uh-huh. And it was... And I had the feeling at the time that the guards who were here and so on were trying to be nice to everybody. Mm. There was a convivial feeling. So, as I said, if you had to be detained, it was a good place to be detained. They played ping pong a lot. We knew that.
Were you aware when he was released? Can you say anything about that? I mean, it was what, 1946?
1946, when he suddenly was released and he came and stayed with my aunt. And I was there. We were already tight, just my aunt and me, in a one-room apartment. Now adding him to it made it even tighter. But I was going to school. I was busy all day long. And, of course, she was going to work all day. So that we spent evenings together. We had parties. I know he, as usual, he had gave some talks of his travels. He had slides and would give talks and so on. And friends of my aunt would come. And then he had people visiting. We immediately had visitors from Buffalo and from various different places who came to see him. And he still didn't quite know what would happen to him. And I think since his divorce had been final, I think some of these visitors were sort of thinking of marriage.
Oh.
But
so
it
was
never
he
happened.
Married when he was here?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I think
I think
the divorce was final. What was the date of the divorce?
Yeah, it's
1941, is it?
Yeah, I think it's 1941.
I think his divorce was final at that time.
Just about when he came here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think some of the visitors were thinking of that.
Uh-huh. So do you have a sense of whether, having been here for a number of years, was he able to pick up his life in other ways? I mean, in other words, his working life, did he work anymore? Or
he did not work when he was there with us for that two-month time period. And
what did he do for work? Did he taught?
He had been teaching, yes, and he did do quite a bit of writing.
Writing. Mm-hmm.
And I still have some of the articles that he wrote. And in fact, as I was telling Margaret, I took one of them to my father, and I asked him if he would like to hear an article about.
What were they written about?
Well, this was an article about the future unification of Europe. Happened to be the one that I took that was in American Mercury. And I was reading it to my father, but I didn't tell him who wrote it.
Oh.
And I didn't tell him when it was written. So I'm just reading to him and editing out references of Churchill making a speech or something which would give it away.
Date it. Mm-hmm.
Then my father said, you know, I don't know whom you're reading, but he's truly out of date. So
well,
I was reading this in the year 2000, I think I was reading it, and the article had been written in 1937, right?
Hey, your father's sharp.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. He said he is truly out of date, this person. He said, where did you find him?
Mm-hmm.
But it was just fun to read it to him.
So can you say anything else about the rest of his life? In other words, he got out of here and he came to stay with you, and then what happened after that?
Then we went, my brother and I, we had to meet up. Heidi said my brother stayed with us too, but he did not. He stayed with a friend of his who was living in Queens at the time. We were both going to Jamaica High School. And my brother and I went to New Hampshire, is where my parents had moved to. And then my mother told us that Uncle Fried was going to be deported. And he did not want to go back. He had made a life here, and he had certainly had, much of his life had been very pleasant here. And I think he wanted to stay.
And what year was this, roughly?
Well, I expect it was in 1946. It seemed to me not too long after I left that he had to be deported, but I could be wrong in that. But not too long afterwards.
And so was he picked up again then to be deported?
No, I think he was simply told that he had to return, and he did.
And he did?
And mm-hmm. he did, sure. You didn't argue that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder if he was deported out of Ellis Island, actually, because that was a deportation place.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's possible that he might have come back for a short time here mm-hmm. in order mm-hmm. to do that. But how it went and which boat he took, or, I don't know.
Well, then, Margaret, did you see him then when he went back to Germany?
When he arrived in Celle. Yeah.
In 1946 or so?
I would assume it was more 47. I was 11 or 12 when I saw him, and I was born in 36. So that is then 47, 48 that I saw him for the first time. And we were also anticipating that he was coming. I remember that he was going to be coming.
What was the family, did the family have like an expectation of him?
As a child, certainly I had expectation of an uncle coming to Germany, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can you remember your first impressions?
My first impression? I don't know if I really make this up now, that he was very tall, which he actually was. And for me as a child, maybe it was important that he was even taller than my father. But my father wasn't there, so no. I don't know too much, no. When is our grandmother's birthday? Do you remember? Was that at Christmas time?
I don't remember her birthday.
Because I remember the big thing was that he was there for her birthday for the first time, and he chose not to stay with all the ladies. He just came for a short while. Uh-huh. But as I said on the other tape, he talked to me more personal. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that you had this book without covers.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about
that. We had a fair number of books without covers, because they were always removed when they were given to my uncle, and he was in solitary confinement. So evidently my sister had Anna Karenina, well, I had War and Peace.
You mean they were removed so he wouldn't hurt him, do anything with the covers? Is that?
Well, I think perhaps you can hide a knife in a cover or something like that. I'm presuming that's why it was taken off. But they also had comments of his along the edges, and that was sort of interesting for me to see. So I read his copy of Anna, not Anna Karenina, but War and Peace. Yeah. I still have it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe Margaret, or actually from different perspectives, can you say anything about his mother and in relation to him?
Sort of. She was very, very happy that he came initially. And so I was always under the impression that this was a wonderful homecoming. That was my thinking. But I can see now why he really didn't want to come home, because he had been away for too long from Germany, right? Since 1923. So most of his adult life, professionally wise, had been in this country. And that's when you make your important friends. I know this from my first husband. So, but I now know through his son, who has the letters, that he wanted to come back and try to come back in the 50s to this country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did he ever come back?
No.
He never visited?
One thing I can remember I was thinking of when Ruth was talking about him talking to him talking easily to children, or when she talked about him having two sons in the second marriage to our Aunt Johanna. And the first son is called Hendrik, and the second son is called Peter. And the great surprise was that when the first son learned how to speak, which I assume was when he was two or two and a half, that Uncle Fried taught him all the capitals of the world. So this little boy, you know, by that time I guess I was, how old was I? 52, well, 16. That he was asked what was the capital of Iceland, and I didn't know it, but he knew it, this 2.5-year-old boy. He knew it was Reykjavik. And then, naturally, I never forgot what was the capital of Iceland.
Yeah, but this was a whole characteristic of that family. Now, my mother had to learn the three highest mountains in Mexico.
Oh. Her father made her learn that?
So they are Tlalapetl, Popocatépetl, and Maria. And we all did that. I forced my children to learn the difference between isosceles triangles and equilateral triangles and so on when they were 2 and 3.
Right.
They always had their bread cut according to the triangle of their choice.
Huh.
And
so this is a family.
It's a family
characteristic.
Trait. Right. Uh-huh. It's a family trait.
Well,
Margaret didn't seem to join it
in
forcing her daughter to learn inconvenient things.
And I think when I talk to my, I mean, he lives in Germany, he's far away. We are in contact, but not regular contact. When I talked to Henrik, he didn't know that he knew these capitals of the world. So, I mean, at the age of 3 or even younger. So,
So what about your Uncle Fried's life after he returned to Germany? What can you sort of put it in
perspective? Well, he had lots of books in his room, but I may have mentioned that before, books and magazines. And he was not complaining. I didn't know that he was trying to come back to this country. I did not. I had no notion that he was unhappy. He did not appear unhappy to me. But I can see why, on the long run, to live with my grandmother was a little difficult for him. I mean, she was into gardening and into church, and none of these things were his interest. So, but I also didn't notice that they did not get along. It did not come across to me.
Mm-hmm. Did he have?
I wasn't there that much. I was not in the same house. I lived in a small town and now and then visited my grandmother.
I see. Do you know if your uncle had a social group, a social network of people that he...
He certainly tried, I think, because he made also there in, as I said before, he gave these speeches in different towns about his life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a one way of... have an interesting life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that he was thinking and reading and writing, I assume. And then he married. But, you know, where was his study? Where could his family live? It was all a problem because of the small rooms and few rooms where one could meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he had his own room. But I don't know where Tante Johanna's room was. I mean,
Did he get a job teaching or doing anything?
No, as far as I remember, he got a job with his brother, and they worked for...
With his brother? With
Uncle
Hubert?
Hubert.
Doing what?
Uncle Hubert, Karl Hans, the cousin, and I think also Uncle Fried. Got a job in the laundry for the British occupation forces.
In the laundry?
Yeah, I think they worked in the laundry. One thing they had soap. And something to eat. But you could use it, I guess, to get something to eat with soap. You could go to the black market.
Mm.
But everybody had to exist until the money exchange was better. Couldn't buy anything for money, really.
So do you have a sense of how long he persisted in trying to get back to the United States? I mean, did he stop trying at some point that you know of, or?
I cannot tell you that. I just found out recently when we came for the first interview with Heidi that I did call up Henrik in Germany, and we were talking not about the same subjects. I was interested in letters that refer to Ellis Island, and he was talking about letters that he wrote in 1950, 51, 52, or even later, that he wanted to come back to this country. That is, so I only found out about that. He wanted to come back. 2 months ago. And then I read this paper there, and there it is mentioned also.
Yeah.
So Hendrik has the letters that he trying seemingly to have him, I mean, that to establish that there was nothing wrong with him of having lived in this country. I mean, he wanted to be whitewashed. Or
whitewashed?
He wanted to be things to be put right. Whitewash may be a wrong expression.
Yes, yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
But I had the feeling, too, he wanted to come back, and I was writing him mm-hmm. at the time. So I knew he wanted to come back.
But he did, in the end, get a teaching job in secretarial school, not at a university level.
Oh, uh-huh.
Teaching English, this is an assumption now.
So I
Hannover. That's why I had to travel every day from Celle to Hannover, and he was either on a motorcycle or on a Motorola, which is an even more flexible, insecure vehicle. And there was some street repair done, or new building of a street between Celle and Hannover, and that is where the accident occurred, that he died immediately. You know, when the street becomes more slippery and you are not aware of it, or sand was on the street, I don't know why I think of that, but there was repair work being done on the road that he took every day. And that is where this the calamitous accident took place, where he died.
And how old was he at the time?
Well, it was about in 1953, he was in his 50s. So he must have been about 54.
Mm-hmm. And having these two young children.
Because I was at Harvard. I know when I was at Harvard, and that's when I heard that he was...
Peter was half a year old, I think.
Well,
and Hendrik,
you know that better.
Do you remember, did you go to his funeral?
Yes, I did go to his funeral.
Is there
a very, very sad funeral in comparison to the funeral of my grandmother, which was not very much later. And I coming home thinking, oh, we were happy at the second funeral. I mean, I don't know why that was so, but it was just so tragic. Nobody thought that this would happen.
Yeah. Was there any particular eulogy or anything at the funeral that kind of spoke of the unusual and many faceted life that he had?
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was, I have the feeling, but I really don't remember, that my father did do the service, but as a brother I assume that he did the service in Celle for him. And you asked me where his grave was, right? We have to call up where it is. Because my assumption was that he was put next to his mother and in this town of Westerzelle, which is right, goes into Zelle.
And his mother died after he did.
Yeah, yeah. And this was what my observation, that I saw the same people practically a few months later. I think it was half a year apart.
But she had been very ill, and in
yeah,
one way
for
it was a blessing.
She had been inside the hospital,
right.
Out the hospital.
Right.
And
it was a blessing that she
yeah,
had died.
She was in a wheelchair. Yeah. She could, occasionally, she was in a wheelchair. Most of the time, she was in the bed. She stayed with us for the past 2 years of her life.
I see. And his father? Was his father also buried there?
Yes, he was. I remember the, and you remember.
I remember the cross.
Our grandfather's grave better than I do. Because
yes, because we went every couple
Saturday
of weeks
to
take care of it.
Flowers,
yeah.
Water it.
Yeah.
And then did his wife and children stay in Germany?
They did stay in Celle. Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. And then the house was sold, so she had to move out. And actually, for the first time, I think she had her own private life with her two boys in a newly built small house. Small house, but it was her house. because living with my grandmother in her grandmother in that house upstairs was not that pleasant for her. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So And then my father was didn't take care of the family, but whenever he was in Celle, he would go and visit his wife and the two children. And whenever he could incorporate, he'd made trips for the parish. Once a year, he had a busload of people and brought them to an interesting place in the area, and he incorporated the two sons of Uncle Fried. They accompanied him on these parish trips.
Now, your father was a minister?
Right, yes.
And was your Uncle Fried religious in any way?
I don't think so. Not that much, no. No, he was not. One thing I want to say about his son, his younger son who visited me a year ago, one of his first statements was, "Did you know that your father was my most preferred uncle?" So, you know, I mean... They tried to invite them as much as they could, especially when they, again, lived close to Celle. My father had another parish in the meantime. But we were all grown up, and then my parents invited my cousins. So they could pick cherries in the garden, things like that. I don't know if... we have to talk to the sons with... came across through their mother. There was a diary, and there are letters, but we don't know how many are left.
And do they live in Germany now?
One of them lives in Berlin, yes, and the other one lives in Konstanz, which is in the south of Germany. Bodensee is in the German name also of the same lake, and on this lake is the city of Konstanz.
Well, just a question to each of you. How do you think your thinking about your uncle has changed over the years? I mean, from the time that you knew him and then he died, and now years and years later, do you think your thinking has changed about him, or your memories or your attitudes or anything?
I think my impression of him has been pretty constant. The same thing. My father now keeps trying to change my opinion on this. And I told him he's barking up the wrong tree.
He wants to change your opinion of your uncle?
Yes. Well, he has notions all the time.
Well, we are women, and that's, I guess, has something to do with it.
They were good friends at the time, and he never said anything much about my uncle until many years after he died, and my mother had died too. So there's no one to contradict him anymore.
But he seems to have put a lesser light on your uncle over the
time. Well, he would say that. He didn't really like to work. He really liked to have a good time. Statements like this. Mm-hmm. But it's not true. He was frequently busy.
Uh-huh.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, he has things to prove it, right?
That's right. He does have things to prove it.
Yeah.
And in point of fact, when you talk about with my father about what he did the first few years he was in this country. He enjoyed my uncle's company a great deal, and the two of them did many things and seemed to enjoy each other, and certainly my father enjoyed my uncle's sister. She's my mother. And as I said, he was a constant visitor, and I know that my father enjoyed it the whole time that he came.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you pretty much feel as far as you can see,
I haven't changed my opinion on him, and everything I've seen and things that I've read, and unfortunately, his handwriting isn't that easy for me to read. I have letters that he's written. I would like to read them, but they're quite a job. So I have to always say, well, if I have 4 or 5 hours, maybe, I'll do that. And it hasn't come up.
Heidi and I read 3 letters in 2 weeks, which we deciphered. And in one of them, it was not Uncle Fried's letters, but it was a letter of our grandmother. And it refers to the time that you want to go back to the United States in 1939, 1940. Tante Johanna went with you to Hamburg.
That's
in order to see that you could get the
passport,
the visa or the passport.
I had to get
and
a
she
passport.
Did not manage.
Right.
I don't know how it was managed in the end, but Tante Johanna could not manage it for you in Hamburg.
I know she couldn't.
Yeah, but this is sort of grandmother Auhagen talks about, our grandmother talks about Tante Johanna coming to visit to get you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember it clearly.
Yeah. And then she talks about you doing homework and how hard she tries that you spell correctly these German words. She's over-anxious, and she made you copy it again, you know, the work.
I remember that, too.
That is in that letter. And so you see my grandmother there. Here's this girl from this country who has to do a second language, and she makes her work and work and work that this 9-year-old or 10-year-old does her work neatly with good handwriting. So it's very fussy, you know, to go through that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so if somebody like that has a son like Uncle Fried,
right.
It doesn't match, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, the point is, Margaret, I came over hardly knowing German. I knew a little baby German, which was a little embarrassing, but they had a son who was extremely bright, and they did not. I'm sure grandmother could tell him practically nothing, and that was what irked her.
Uh-huh.
While me, she could tell anything to.
Yeah, but the kind of relationship would be obvious that they weren't simpatico.
No, I don't think either one of them. It was very interesting to me when I would talk to my mother about her father, and she just loved her father, and he was the most wonderful person in the world. And I had asked my uncle about his father, the same one.
Father, right.
And it was a totally different person, totally different. His father was nothing but a thorn in the side to him. I couldn't believe that there could be such a different opinion about a father between a brother and a sister.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, is there anything else
it was great fun seeing you. I hope you have a lot of time to see all this over again.
I do. I'm going to put this, I'm going to make a copy, and this is the Friedrich Ernst Auhagen collection that's at the Northwestern University Library. It tells what's in it. So we'll have a copy of that in our file. Mm-hmm. And I guess we've concluded. If there's anything else you wish to say. Okay, well, I thank you both. This is really quite an extraordinary, interesting...
Well, it's been nice for me. I'm glad you liked it, but it's been fun
very good for you,
here.
Too. Good, yes. Good. And maybe you'll look around and remember certain parts of the building.
Right.
Okay. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I've been speaking with Ruth Twombly and Marguerite Monod Kelly.
Well, you can also
close?
Say Mono Kelly.
Mono Kelly. Okay. And today is the July the 9th, the year 2004, and I'm signing off.